Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. So nice to have you with us on this November the 17th. If you're living on the West Coast, if you're on the East Coast, or in the Central Time Zone, it is now November the 18th. And we're happy to be back with you after what seems like a terribly long weekend. Especially with all the craziness going on in the world. We'll be talking about that as well as some ways of bringing sanity back to this lonely place. Did I say lonely? Yeah, it's lonely. It gets lonely when you see how many people have fallen for the trap. And we're going to be talking about all the different kinds of traps that have been set for us and see if we can't sidestep them, jump over them, or just move them out of the way. Tonight's guest has been with us before on Evident Footprints, and he's a very dear friend, a fellow talk show host. He has his own show, which has aired on a couple of different networks, Republic Broadcasting Network, as well as We the People. And if you remember, back last month, I had the world's shortest affiliation with another network, two nights, as far as live shows go. And, We the People Network sort of folded at that time. And so, I kept my home here at, BBS Radio. This gentleman, ended up without a gig for a short time, and he'll be again broadcasting on the 29th of this month with Oracle Broadcasting, and I presume the name of his show will remain The American Awakening. He also has a website called theamericanawakening.org. This gentleman is a patriot. He is a financial consultant, or an estate planner, you could say. He's a certified private investigator. And he happens to be a pilot and even a musician, a singer, and a guitar player. And he's my good friend, Michael Herzog. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. You're right so far. And then, you know, you mentioned that we're going to talk about sanity. That's great because, you know, it's been rather insane lately with everything that's going on here. But I wanted to mention, you know, you're a musician in your own right. And I happened to run across it. I don't know whether you had heard this, Don, but Paul McCartney came out and said that there's a 14-minute clip of, you know, the Beatles jamming that he has the master tape of that had never been released, that he's thinking of releasing now. He needs to get permission from the estates of George Harrison and John Lennon, but also from Ringo Starr, and then they're going to release this 14-minute clip. I thought that was rather exciting, being a musician and growing up in that era. What about you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Now, does Michael Jackson own any of the royalties on that? Or
I don't know, but he's being sued by the Arabs. You know that, right?
No, I hadn't heard that.
Oh, Don. Well, you know, that's part of the problem, Don. Because
is this a joke coming on
here? No. No, that's part of the problem is that we are so into what we do in alternative radio, you see, that we forget that every once in a while on the mainstream, something significant comes out, if you want to call that significant.
Yeah.
In that, I'm saying that, and I just read this tonight on, I believe it was, what was it, Yahoo.com, I think, Michael Jackson is being sued by the Arabs, the people in Dubai or wherever it is he's living, because they had lent him millions of dollars for something, and evidently he, you know, didn't do what he was supposed to do with the money. I don't know, but you know, it's interesting that some people that are celebrities like Michael Jackson or O.J. Simpson, they just can't seem to stay out of trouble, you know?
I told that boy to stay away from the Jesus juice, too, and you see, he didn't do it.
And that's what happens, you know. I'm so excited because there's a lot of things going on in my world. You know that I've relocated recently, and I took a sabbatical. Well, you know, it wasn't a choice. We the People closed its doors, as you mentioned earlier, and I was kind of on hiatus for what? I've been 6 weeks off the air now, other than just on your show. And I finally decided to take a weekend slot on Oracle Broadcasting, of which my website's being redesigned. I'm going to be able to stream from my network. I'm going to link your site to my website along with several other Patriot sites. So there's a lot of good things that are coming up, and it's freed up some of my time to be able to get back into consulting, you know, as far as what I used to do, where I was not able to do it, being committed to a daily show. Back on those other networks. So, yeah, I'm really excited about that. I'd like to say, Don, that I'm excited about the new president, but unfortunately, I can't be excited. And I don't know whether you want to talk about this or not, but this really bothers me. You know, this guy, and I'm speaking of Obama, was campaigning throughout this whole election campaign about change. He's talking about change. You know, we need a change. Everybody needs a change, right? So you know, he rallies the dumbed-down, mind-numb American troops, and he winds up getting voted into office. Well, what does he do once he gets there? He turns around and appoints who else but Rahm Emanuel as Obama's chief of staff. Mm-hmm. Now, for those of you who don't know who the chief of staff was for George W. Bush, September 11, 2001, that guy that came into the classroom when George Bush was reading My Pet Goat Upside Down, that was Andy Card. He was the chief of staff at that time. Remember that, Don, right?
Yeah.
Now, this guy has a lot of dirty laundry himself. I'm not going to go there. But Rahm Emanuel, do you know anything about him? Have you gone down your journalistic, your prolific rabbit hole on Rahm Emanuel yet?
The answer to that question is yes.
Okay.
You want to hear what I know?
I want to hear what you know, and then I'm going to bubble over with what I know. So go ahead. You first.
Okay. Well, you remember a while back his name was spoken quite a bit. In fact, I remember hearing Oprah Winfrey mention him all the time. He's another Chicago boy, but his roots go back a little bit further than that. His father, Benjamin, was a terrorist. And also, Rahm was on the board of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which I find really interesting because...
Yes, because they're broke now.
Yes.
Rahm probably took the money, as in, you know, Dove Zackheim, when Donald Rumsfeld announced on September 10th, 2001, that $2.3 trillion was missing, and Dove Zackheim happened to be the comptroller for the Pentagon, and he just conveniently made his escape out the back door and went back to Israel. But Rahm Emanuel is also a dual citizen with Israel. But go ahead and continue.
Yeah, well, I was going to add that part next, that there's a good chance that he hasn't renounced his citizenship. So we have another person that's got dual citizenship after Chertoff, and they say, now I don't know this for a fact, but Cheney probably has dual citizenship, Rumsfeld, all these guys, in case they have to make a quick getaway.
In case, yes, and Bush has 100,000 acres down in Panama, or not Panama, but where is it? Paraguay, and Dick Cheney owns property, and he got all his money out of the United States, and he owns property in Dubai. So, yes, they've already set up their getaway point, but go ahead.
Now, are you going to tell me that Rahm Emanuel owns the limousine service that Larry Sinclair called?
No, but I might be able to go down a rabbit hole and find that somewhere too. You know, what's amazing about this whole thing, and I know you know this, Don, because you're just the greatest at journalistic, you know, research, is that it's just you go down, and we use the term rabbit hole. You go down the rabbit hole, and when you get down there a couple of feet, it doesn't take long, you know, then you find 832,000 other rabbit holes that you have to go down, and behind each one is an even more nefarious surprise, you know. So it just never stops. And what amazes me about these people is they all keep – it's like a revolving door. You know, they're out of office for a while, then when the party, the supposed, you know, the illusion of a party comes back into office, and this time it's the Democrats, all these people come out of the woodwork, and they come right back in where they were before. And you know, and speaking of that, are you aware that the administration is being appointed by Obama? Most of them were in the Clinton administration.
Yeah, it's a real party now, isn't it?
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get you off track.
No, no pun intended.
Yeah.
No, well, you know, I mean, I haven't really gone much further down the rabbit hole on that. I've been going down the hole on Obama, actually, still. I've got more revelations.
See, oh, there's, yeah. Maybe there's more than 830,000 different holes to go through. I don't know.
Add a few more.
Yeah, okay.
I suppose now the next question my guest is going to ask me is what have I discovered there?
Go ahead. you just answered the own question, the next question I was going to ask you. So go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, here we go. Well, it so happens, you know, I basically have been saying on my show for the past week or so that Dorothy Gale still lays claim to Kansas as her stomping ground, that the Wizard of Oz will always be have a home in Kansas. And isn't it interesting that this Obama story started out in Kansas? And not much of anything can be verified except for a few really interesting details. Now, I know because of a witness, and this is somebody that went to school with Stanley Ann Dunham in kindergarten and first grade. This is coming out in part five, by the way, of The Three Stooges Go to Washington.
They played in the sandbox together, right?
Not quite, but this person was in love with Stanley Ann and never forgot her name and had been listening to all the rhetoric from the media about Obama's mother, Ann, as they call her in the media. And he read Jerome Corsi's book, Obama Nation, and then he was astounded by some of the stuff he read, and he went and started doing some browsing and research on the web. Now, this guy is pretty educated, so this is not some wacko out there like the media likes to say because he happened to be on the internet. And he read the Three Stooges article, all four parts, on McCain and then on Obama, and was amazed at what I had written about Oklahoma City, because he went to school with Stanley Ann Dunham in Oklahoma City. And there's no mention of Oklahoma whatsoever, except by this writer who's talking to you right now, and that I had discovered Rolla Payne's social security number in Oklahoma. And it's a strange place to get a social security number if you're living in Kansas and, you know, living on a farm and, you know, everything that they...
Clicking your heels together three times and all that stuff.
Yes. Saying, there's no place like home.
Yes. Home wasn't really there, so go ahead, yes.
Okay, so in particular, he went to school with her from 1949 through 1951. Now, 1949, she would have been 7 years old. So it's kind of old for a kindergartner. In fact, he said that she was 18 months older. And
she flunked kindergarten. Give her a break, Don. You know.
Well, the name of the school was Kindernook, and it was in War Acres, Oklahoma. Pretty specific information. And Mrs. Estes was the teacher. Now, Mrs. Estes had schools. She still has schools that were founded by her all over the country. I don't know if she's still alive today, but she's from the Estes family that founded Estes Park, Colorado. And these schools there are some in Pennsylvania and I think Michigan and Minnesota. It's pretty much around the Midwest. And then there's the one in Oklahoma. He described kindergarten as a mind control school for little kids. That's basically how he described it. Now, he sent me a picture of the first grade class at Putnam City Elementary School, where he also attended school with her. And he was still in love with her at that time, and he mentioned it quite frequently to his parents. His father was a chemist, and it turned out later on in life he learned that his father was also a CIA agent, and that one of their best friends were a couple from Chicago and Lebanon. Again, let me repeat that. Their best friends were from Chicago and Lebanon. Notice I didn't say Kansas. Chicago and Lebanon. Stanley Armour and Madeline Lee Payne Dunham were the two people. Now, he knew Stanley Armour as Mr. Al. Mr. Al was also a CIA agent. And Madeline Dunham likely was as well, even when she was working at Boeing. The CIA has a contract, or not a contract, a dossier, I misspoke, on Stanley Armour Dunham, which describes sabotaging the building of a particular series of planes that were being made at Boeing in Wichita. And so if they were in Kansas, it was while they were at Wichita, Boeing, not living there, you know, being raised and meeting each other on the opposite side of the tracks to go hear the big bands and all the flowery stuff that Obama wrote in his book. Quite to the contrary, their purpose was just Boeing when they were in Wichita. And they have a file on Stanley Armour Dunham having stolen blueprints and selling them to the Nazis of other planes. So it's quite a different story. Now, the pictures speak a thousand words. And he gave me a photo of the Dunhams and another couple. And it was, he thought it was taken in 1947. He said it could have been the beginning of 1948, but likely it was a 1947 photo. We know the CIA existed then. We have that information from many, many people. Otto Skorzeny himself talked about that, and I wrote about that as well, and George Bush's connection to the CIA and to the Nazis. So here we have another patsy working for the Rockefellers, who also had the Nazi connections. There's no reason to think that they didn't. And this third couple that was there was unidentified. Last week, around Wednesday or Thursday, one of my listeners emailed me a link to a website where there were some audio files. And I was listening to this guy talk, and I'm thinking, what is this? This is some kind of cult or something. This guy was talking about getting messages from Mars and Venus, and he studied with Indian gurus, and he studied the Vedas and the Upanishads and yoga. And he was doing yoga from 8 to 12 hours a day. And there's a picture of this guy sitting in a half lotus. And it's the worst half lotus I've ever seen. Somebody doing yoga 8 to 12 hours a day could do a full lotus, no problem. This guy was a total farce as far as I was concerned. What he was teaching, supposed to be spiritual teaching, channeling messages from aliens on other planets, and then combining it with yoga. And everybody was calling this guy master. And I'm listening to these recordings, I'm thinking, I wonder if there's a picture of this guy in this website. The foundation was called Ethereus. And so I looked around on the website and I found a picture of him. And I'm looking at the picture and I'm saying, darn, this looks just like the guy in this photo from Oklahoma City. The CIA agents having dinner together. And sure enough, this guy is a spitting image. He's Dr. George King. So now I have all three couples in the photo from going back to 1947 identified. And what's interesting is the Dunhams appear to change in every time they have a photograph taken. Even Stanley Yan appears to change drastically. I'm not talking about a little bit. I'm talking about drastically. But the most damning piece of information this guy gave is the fact that he knows without a doubt that that is Stanley Ann, pointed her out in the picture, and she's got blonde hair at 7 years old and 8 years old. She's got blonde hair, yet she ends up with coal black hair later on. Now, women can color their hair, but they don't usually grow a jawline that's 1 to 2 inches longer in a matter of a year or so, unless there's something fishy going on. So we've got one heck of a story here.
We've got one big happy family, Don. Now, come on. You know, all these links that come together, and it's almost like it was planned that way, you know? But you know, I wanted to mention one other thing about Rahm Emanuel. You know what his nickname is?
go ahead, tell me.
Rambo.
Rambo? I knew it was a joke.
Yeah, well, no, it's not a joke. I mean, this guy is a, because here's where I'm going with this. Okay, Rahm Emanuel is a pro-Israeli Orthodox Jew who was educated in the Talmudic Yeshiva and served as a volunteer in the Israeli Defense Force. Now, he's a dual citizen of Israel, which we know, you know, his office refused to deny, this is an article out of American Free Press, when they inquired, his office refused to deny that, and as we know, Israel is the only nation where Americans can apply for and obtain citizenship without automatically renouncing their United States citizenship. Now, all of us that are familiar with the 9/11 terrorist attacks know that the Israeli Defense Force was instrumental in training the dancing Israelis who, remember, from a rooftop in Weehawken, New Jersey, had the foreknowledge to videotape the World Trade Center towers being struck by kamikaze jetliners and then celebrate afterwards. Remember that?
That was that show called Dancing with the Towers, right?
Yeah, but it was mentored by members of Chicago's corrupt party machine like convicted Congressman Dan Rostenkowski, who was affiliated with Clinton, and Rahm Emanuel gravitated to Washington in 1991 after becoming Bill Clinton's campaign finance committee director. So his family, as you mentioned, you know, has a history of violence because his father was a Benjamin, an integral member of the Zionist terror group known as Irgun in the 1940s, which, you know, you were talking about a few minutes ago. Excuse me. And Irgun bombed a Jerusalem's King David Hotel in 1946, where 96 people were killed. So, you know, Rahm Emanuel is the son of a terrorist who directly plotted the assassination of Count Bernadotte, and that was a Swedish diplomat and United Nations envoy. So we've got all of these people that, you know, Obama's supposed to be instituting change. And from what I see here, he's instituting change for the worse. And let us not forget that his vice presidential companion here, Joe Biden, is also an admitted Zionist. Now, what do you see happening here? I see a chief of staff who is dual citizenship, who's a Zionist. I see his vice president, who's a Zionist. I smell the distinct possibility of an early presidential assassination, Don.
Well, it seems like they're trying to push us into heavy support for Israel, that it's not there already. But, it's like we're to be put into a position where we absolutely have to do whatever Israel says. And I find this unconscionable. With the smallest countries in the whole world, where do they get that power? To wield that kind of power to tell us to go bomb another country. And, you know, they're axing officers in the military for refusing to go along with this, left and right. This has been going on for months. And so, these guys don't want to just go start a war. It's obvious that that's happening. And the money laundering is going to continue. All of these people are involved heavily in real estate money laundering. And that's more of the information I have about Madeline Dunham. I know specifically what she did at the Bank of Hawaii. She was an escrow agent, and she also handled new mortgages for the bank.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the, you know, the mortgages and the finance and so forth, because we right now we have a Secretary Henry Paulson in there who is brother has to be Al Capone. And I'm sure he's changed his name at some point in time. But these people that Barack Obama has either appointed or is talking about appointing, I mean, we've got Lawrence Summers, you know, that he's talking about naming as the Treasury Secretary to replace Paulson. Now, do you know anything about him?
I have to say not much. So why don't you fill us in?
Well, okay. If Lawrence Summers is named the Treasury Secretary in the President-elect's cabinet, as many observers, by the way, believe will be the case, Summers was one of the key architects of the financial crisis. And so hiring this guy to fix the economy makes as much sense as appointing Paul Wolfowitz to oversee the Iraq withdrawal. And looking at the trail of economic destructions that Summers left behind in other crisis-stricken countries who sought his advice in the past, then terror might be a more appropriate word than disappointment. But, you know, we're talking about somebody to replace Secretary Paulson, who him in itself, I mean, if you've been following, and I'm sure you have, what has been going on with this bailout, you know, here they threatened Congress with martial law if they didn't pass this bailout. And now that they've passed the bailout and they've given the control of the money to Senator Paulson, this guy's turned around and changed his mind, for crying out loud. And he didn't give the money where he said he was going to give it. And they don't know where the money went. For all they know, he could have given it to his friends. And there's been congressional hearings with the assistant. What's his name? Neil Kashkari, I believe. And they had been raking this guy over the coals to try to find out what's going on, where the money is, why they've changed direction. And there's this particular section in that bill, if you recall, that says that it's a secret and they don't have to tell anybody. And this guy has reminded Congress on three or four occasions that they don't have to tell anybody. So it just puts Congress in their place to show that they are nothing more than just a token Congress. They have no control over this at all.
They're just puppets like our leaders, you know.
You're right. And so we've got this money that has been delegated to this guy. We don't know where the money went. In the mortgage business, and, you know, I was in the mortgage business for 5 years, you know that. And, matter of fact, I had a couple of calls from borrowers wanting to refinance their property. So I got back into it and did a little investigation here the other day, talked to a good friend of mine who's been in the mortgage business for a long time. And, do you know, I got a new telephone hooked up. I'm going to share this story with you. I got a new telephone hooked up the other day. And evidently they didn't do what I asked them to do, which is charge me 90 cents a month to make it non-published. I got three calls all in one day from mortgage brokers telling me about this great government plan that's going to reduce my mortgage by 50%, which is total nonsense because the government has not done anything for the homeowner, for the borrower. Paulson has control of this money. There's a lot of it that's already been allotted. The banks are hoarding this money. They don't know where it's gone. They don't know who's getting it. A lot of it has gone to bail out AIG, which is, these guys are all backslapping buddies. So they're not doing – they're basically just looting the economy. They are these homes and you know, back where I am, and I'll put it out here. I moved back to Phoenix, Arizona, and I can't walk down the street without seeing a sign out in somebody's yard. Matter of fact, I just walked over to the grocery store today, and just within, I would say, 10 houses – there are 4 out of 10 houses on one block, okay, that have a sign out front saying owned by the bank. Now, one of those specific houses, Don, last year was up for sale. And I remember the price because I took one of those little sheets out that they have underneath the sign, and I was looking at the little flyer, and it was $184,000 or something like this. Well, now that same property is bank-owned, and the bank is trying to sell it for $109,000. Now, I did the math on that, and that's about a 40% decrease. And in talking to this mortgage broker friend of mine here in Phoenix the other day, and he was talking about certain areas in the valley are worse than others, but he's talking about across the board between 35 and 40% decrease, and that's the tip of the iceberg. And these guys up the top, these guys that have been allocated this money, Don, by Congress, because Congress was threatened with martial law, have turned around and basically stolen this money, and they won't tell them where it went.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't surprise me, knowing what's going on down in Maricopa County anyway. You know, that's the hub of the money laundering racket for the Justice Department.
And I happen to fall right smack dab in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and on that subject, I want to continue with this just for a moment here, because there's an article here that I had saved, and I want to pull it up and read it here, because what they're talking about, there was a G20 summit just last week, you know that. Mm-hmm. All these countries got together, and they're trying to figure out what to do. And so they're talking about going to a world currency. And if that happens, and I've got two articles here. Let me see if I can pull one up here. They're talking about what will happen to gold. And so for all your listeners out there who happen to own gold, some of the if I can bring this up here, I'm going to see if I can give you some statistics on it. But they're talking about if they turn around and reissue monetary currency, that gold, if they do it at 100%, let me see, let me go down to the bottom here, that gold will go up as high as, now get this figure, let me read here a second.
Okay.
I have to find it. Here we go. If they monetize 100% of the outstanding public and private sector debt in the United States, then the official government price of gold would have to be raised to, get this, $53,000 per ounce.
Yeah, I heard something about that. That's insane. You think
if they monetize 50%? I don't know, but that's what they're talking about doing. This whole thing was designed to literally bring down the middle class of the United States, and they're at least up to this point, they're doing a good job of it. And all these people that were out there, you know, they're doing their rah-rah and hanging their signs for Barack Obama because they think there's a change. The only change that is coming is for the worse. And we see that by who he's appointing as his chief of staff, who he's talking about appointing for his Secretary of State. You know, Hillary Clinton's hat is in the ring for that one. I mean, mm-hmm. This is just more of the same, and it's worse. And what really concerns me, Don, is if the American people don't get it by now, when they have seen, 30 to 40% of their 401ks and IRAs dry up over this, then they're never going to get it.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to get you off topic, but I just want to share.
No, that's right on topic, because, you know, we've been talking about this for some time. Since we're talking about some of these appointments, have you heard who Obama has considered appointing for his White House counsel? Gregory Craig.
Well, tell me about him.
Gregory Craig is the attorney that represented the father in the Elian Gonzalez case. You remember the one where Janet Reno said it's okay to give the kid to the father in Cuba? Of course, that was basically to just allow Castro to score a couple of points. John Hinckley Jr., for those listeners out there who weren't familiar with him, and I wrote a little bit about him. His father was a former business partner, John Hinckley Sr., of George H.W. Bush in the oil business. And John Hinckley Jr. Tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan and shot James Brady in the head, which is responsible for the creation of the Brady Bill. And it so happens that Hinckley's brother, John Hinckley Jr.'s brother, was to have dinner the night of that assassination attempt at Neil Bush's house in Denver. Kofi Annan, the former Secretary General of the UN, who was a major character in the oil for food scandal, and which was investigated by the Volcker Commission, and Pedro Gonzalez Pinzon, who is a Panamanian legislator who was wanted for murdering an American soldier in 1992. Now, this is what they're bringing us. This insanity, it just doesn't cease to amaze me. And this guy calls himself a Christian, even though we've heard him on tape saying, McCain is yet to attack my Muslim religion. No one would make that statement unless they were a Muslim. And it's just one lie after another out of this guy. So that and his selective service registration is the new one now. I don't know if you saw that. They tried to make it look like it was signed in 1980 on his 18th birthday. And it's signed July 30th. But the stamp from the post office where he supposedly did this is dated July 29th. And it's a stamp they haven't used for years. I mean, it's the same BS. So,
It never stops. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. What amazes me about all of this, Don, is because we go down, go down the journalistic rabbit hole, if you will, and we find the layers are so deep. So it literally takes, it could take an eternity to uncover all of it, but the public at large doesn't get it. As a matter of fact, I joined a health club the other day because I needed to lose some weight. And I was talking to a few people, you know, because I'm an outgoing kind of guy, and I met, I don't know, half a dozen people in there. And, of course, you can't help but spin over, you know, when you get into a conversation and start talking about the recent election and so forth. And it just amazes me how really, I don't want to say stupid, but uneducated these people are by choice. They don't even want to know. Their eyes glaze over. They throw their hands up in the air. It's like they don't even care anymore.
Yeah.
And this is what concerns me more than anything, is that, you know, in order for us to change this and turn this around, we have to get people to care. And on the flip side of that coin, we've got people who actually think that this cabal, if you will, and we see it happening, you know, just by the people that he's appointing and knowing their background, that it's, we thought George Bush and Dick Cheney were bad. This administration is going to be worse. Not only that, I'll even go a step further and say it's probably going to be the last administration that is going to be elected, even with the voting machines the way they are, by the illusion of a popular vote, Don.
Well, yeah, you're right. I remember Yogi Berra saying, it ain't over till it's over. And there are people calling him president already, or the new president, when he's still the president-elect. And I know, you know, we're fighting the George Soros Trilateral Commission crowd, Council on Foreign Relations and all of that, with self-admitted Zionist Joe Biden beating the drum. I think they're still in for a fight. I don't see people laying down and taking this. Now the main public is oblivious to all of this. They could care less. But I think there's enough coming out, and there's going to be more coming out that somebody's going to have to really address this issue.
Well, and to add insult to injury, and as I mentioned to you before we went on the air, there's a clip that I watched just prior to coming on the air. There was a reporter that was interviewing Rahm Emanuel, and talking about this national draft that they're going to impose. Now, it's not a military draft, but they're talking about all citizens, all, whether it be, you know, men, women, it doesn't make any difference. Between the ages of, you know, they're saying somewhere around 18 to 25, well, by the time it's all over with, we know that'll change, it'll probably be 18 to 42. Mm-hmm. That is going to have to do mandatory civil service for, you know, a period of time where they have to work for the government. And I see this as, you know, if you're doing mandatory civil service and you're working for the government, it's the same thing as the military. You know, once you enroll in the military and as soon as you raise your hand and you swear that oath, they own you. And it's the same thing with the civilian public. Once they swear that oath, which they're going to be mandatorily forced to do, then the government owns them. And I see, how would I say this? I literally see a snitch on every block, Don. You know, and this is going on in our school systems right now, where they, in some school systems, they're actually paying children a bonus and asking questions. Well, do you see any drugs in your mother's cupboard? You know, does your parents scream at you? Do they drink a lot? You know, these questions are very tactfully asked of 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old kids. And of course, as you know, naive as they are, being the youngsters that they are, they're going to tell the truth because they know nothing else to say. And here you've got this. I mean, how many people do we have in this country that are between the ages of 18 and 25, if that were the age range? How many we got? 40 million, maybe?
Yeah.
Can you see 40 million of our sons and daughters running around with a uniform on? And most of them are going to think it's great because they get to wear a uniform and they look good, you know? But
you're looking at implanted chips and flu shots. Number one, that's going to be mandatory. You see, they'll use that as a means for delivering the flu shots. I want to play devil's advocate.
Well, I tell you what. I mean, what I see coming down the road. I mean, it's bad enough already that and I've said this many times on my program that we literally live in a police state. We have for quite some time. But they keep continuing to turn up the heat on us. But now we're going to have another, 30, 40 million Americans under the Obama administration that are in mandatory civil service that are going to be asked to do God knows what. And we know how the prison system works, and we know how the corrupt court system works, and we know how all they're doing, you know, all of the cities are corporatized, and they're all, you know, all they want to do is extract money out of us in whatever way or fashion that they can, whether it be in a divorce court, whether it be in a custody court, whether it be in a conservatorship court. You know that. You've gone on the rabbit hole on that before. So there are 100 different angles of which they are, you know, trying to bring down the middle class in this country by design to introduce a world currency. Now, I don't want to get off topic and go back to that, but, you know, this world currency that they're talking about, the speculation is that once it's introduced, that it'll probably be somewhere around 10 to 1. If you have $10, you'll be able to buy $1 worth of whatever this new currency is. Henceforth is why it would cause the price of gold to go up as exponentially as it will. But that being said, what is that going to do to our society as a whole? What is that going to do to the people that are on Medicare that are, you know, choosing right now whether to pay their house payment or pay their prescription drugs? And that brings us into what you had spoken of before, you know, the forced vaccinations with the thimerosal in the vaccines, you know, mercury as a preservative in there, which takes me to the Georgia Guidestones. I don't want to get too far off topic here, but the Rosicrucians put those up down in Georgia where it says they want to reduce the world population down to 500 million. And they're doing a good job of it through the vaccinations, through the mandatory inoculations, through the chemtrails and so forth. You know, where does this end? What do we do to turn this around, Don?
Well, you know, if I were to ask you the question, if Vladimir Putin came over here and just started spouting off all these laws or all these rules, would we allow him to do that?
No. We would run him out of town on a rail, tarred and feathered.
All right. What about Muammar Gaddafi?
No, we'd run him out of town on a rail, tarred and feathered.
Hugo Chavez.
None of these people. You already know the answer to that. And I was reading, and I'm trying to find this article as I read here, you know, with what they have done with this bailout and what they are, what their agenda is, what their plan is. I was reading, and I'm trying to find this, and I'll find it in a few minutes, I hope. I had it, and I found it, but evidently I erased it. Of all of the companies that have announced through the Securities Exchange that they're closing their doors after the first of the year, And the amount, the names of the companies, I mean, it just blew my mind when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
This in itself shows me that this country already is in a recession, but it's going to go into a depression, and most likely a severe depression, with unemployment up as high as 20-25%. Now, they say that unemployment right now could be running as high as 7.5% at the height of the recession. Now, that is underplayed by design by at least 75% minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Don, but wasn't the figures in the Depression back in the 30s right around 25% unemployment?
If not higher, yeah.
It was something of that nature. But I believe, and this is not just the United States this time, because they have sucked in the entire world, as you know, into this monetary crisis with their CDOs and their hedge funds and all these derivatives that they have sold to all these unwitting people. They've packaged up these $100 million bundles of garbage, you know, with the subprime loans, and they've sold them off to anybody that would buy them, including but not limited to cities, states, and even countries. Look at what has happened to Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
Did they not say that they were going to either file bankruptcy on the world exchange, or they were getting bailed out with a loan from Russia, I believe. I haven't done too much research on that, but
yeah,
I know.
I think they did go bankrupt, and they haven't bought into the EU yet, so that's next. You know, they're trying to force them into that. You see.
Right, but that's just one example. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Now, did I ever tell you the story about Iceland?
No. Is this a long one?
No, it's very short.
Okay.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter if it is or not.
When the Vikings came over. Okay.
Oh, okay. That was a long time ago. Okay.
That was back in what was about 1000 AD or something like that. I mean, this is just a little trivial tidbit here.
The Minnesota Vikings or...
No, this was actually the Nordic, you know, what's his name, Thor and all those guys, you know.
Oh, okay.
That had the little boats with the one sail on it, okay? And they had dragons painted on the sail. But they discovered Greenland and they discovered Iceland, okay? They discovered both those countries.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know, and this is a fact, okay, you can go back and do your homework on this. This is a fact. Greenland was ice, and Iceland was green, okay? Iceland has all the trees and everything, and Greenland is full of ice. But they decided, but there was a bunch of women in Iceland that were very, very pretty, you know, Scandinavian-looking, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, very, very gorgeous women. So they decided to call Greenland Iceland and Iceland Greenland because they didn't want anybody going to Iceland because all the pretty women were there. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yes, that's a bit of trivia. It's 100% gospel truth. Don't remember where I read it. Okay, but it's true. All right, so go ahead, continue. I'm sorry. I just thought I'd throw that out there. Well, you know, we got to lighten this up a little bit.
Yeah, I forgot where we were. This whole thing about, you know, you mentioned the derivatives and the hedge funds and all that. Really, this bailout has been stolen. It's licensed to steal is what it was. And they actually pressured Congress under, I mean, isn't that what extortion and blackmail is? You know, threatening martial law.
Oh, it's terrorism in the highest degree. Sure.
Absolutely. And the money laundering is terrorism. You know, it's treason. In time of war, it's treason. So the money laundering, you know, what are we doing? They're going to assign this debt to us? Excuse me. I have an issue with that. I really have an issue. Now, I brought up these rhetorical questions about Putin and Gaddafi and Chavez because you wouldn't let them come over here and do that because they're not Americans. They're foreigners, right? The same as Barack Obama. The same as Barack Obama. He has not proven who he is and where he's from. I mean, he can't even substantiate his birth date. It's just a figure pulled out of a hat.
Well, now, correct me if I'm wrong. Let me interject here. The lawsuit that Phil Berg had filed has been dismissed, if I remember correctly.
Well, that was dismissed in the third district of eastern Pennsylvania. However, he appealed. He went directly to the Supreme Court, and that's to be heard by December 1st. Now, today, the 18th, I say today, it's in 4 minutes, it'll be today for everybody in the United States. November 18th is Andy Martin's case in Hawaii. Now, I have mixed feelings about that. That, to me, seemed like a diversion just to draw attention away from Phil Berg's suit and maybe even get some kind of a favorable decision to try to preempt what's going to go on before the Supreme Court. I don't really think you can do that. I think once the court agrees to hear the case, there's no lower court that can supersede the authority of the Supreme Court. Interesting fact to add to all that information I gave you about Oklahoma City, and I don't know when and how this was obtained, but I've heard also that the CIA knows that the Dunhams are in no way related to Barack Obama, that they have done DNA tests off of drinking glasses of Stanley Armour and Madeline Dunham, and there's no match with Obama whatsoever. Interesting.
These
things need to come out. Now, surprisingly, Fox News is running the story now about Phil Berg's lawsuit against Obama. It's kind of innocuous how they're doing it, but at least they are talking about it because they're very, you know, right wing anyway. So they're going to come out with stuff. The Republican National Committee actually borrowed my Three Stooges title and used, was calling Obama a stooge. So, but they failed to mention that McCain was one too. So, now the reason McCain never brought up Obama's birth certificate issue and his citizenship is he has the same problem himself, as you well know, that the hospital that he claims he was born in wasn't built till about 7 years after his so-called birth. And we can't substantiate when he was born, but we certainly can substantiate that he wasn't born at Cocosolo Naval Base in the Panama Canal Zone. And that zone was not even a territory, per se. It wasn't a nation. And so we had a lease there, and that wasn't sovereign U.S. territory. These claims, you read my research on that. The reason McCain didn't bring it up because Obama would have brought up the same issue about his birth certificate. Now, why are we allowing this to occur? This is the thing that gets me. We're going to take a short break, Michael, and when we come back, I'll let you answer that, if there is an answer.
Okay. You'll probably have to repeat the question, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, folks, you're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, Michael Herzog, and I will return shortly. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Well, I was hoping to hear some audio there, but we'll try again here. All right.
Hearing dead silent.
Okay, having a little bit of an issue with our audio feed here, so that in mind, we're going to just move right along and pretend like you heard my theme music in a couple of spots. So we're back with our number two and our special guest, Michael Herzog.
With a question that you asked me that I forgot, if you want to repeat it, I'll see if I can answer it.
And you're going to ask me to repeat the question.
No, that's okay, but I'll tell you what. I mentioned to you earlier.
I asked sort of a rhetorical question, why you thought that people just aren't paying attention to this, why this doesn't mean anything to anybody that these people are not Americans. Well, certainly the alternative media, of course, knows this.
Well, I want to, I had mentioned earlier in the program that I was...
What do you think the problem is?
that what? Why? I don't. I think a lot of them are just in denial. I think that they're frustrated, and they're they're at odds to even know what to do at this point. Because obviously, you know, this goes back. There's been a lot of people, Don, that have been waking up. And if you remember, even back in the elections in 2006, you know, they voted Democratic to oust a lot of these Republicans because they wanted change. They wanted us out of Iraq and so forth. Well, as soon as, you know, they all got in office, Pelosi comes out and says, well, impeachment's off the table. So that didn't work. And now, you know, we've got all these congressmen that voted for this bailout. And do you know that only eight of those congressmen that voted for the bailout were ousted out of office? The rest of them still remain. So, you know, and this is why I keep asking the question, don't they get it? Now, that being said, Don, I mentioned earlier in the program that I was looking for, you know, I had a list of some of the businesses that were going under starting January of 2009. Well, I found this list, and I want to read this off because this is astounding of what the repercussions of this bailout, which is basically a robbery. And this is just the tip of the iceberg here, but I want to read this off for the listening audience because they're going to recognize most of these names. And when you hear how many stores are closing down, you have to ask yourself the question, what are people going to do? Now, let me start. First of all, Circuit City. That's the most recent announcement to the Security Exchange that they're planning on closing stores between October of this year, which was last month it started, and January of next year. It doesn't say how many stores, but Ann Taylor is closing down 117 stores. Lane Bryant, Fashion Bug, and Catherine's to close 150 stores. Eddie Bauer is closing 27 stores. Cash will close all its stores. Talbot's is closing down all its stores. J. Jill is closing all their stores. The Gap is closing 85 stores. Foot Locker is closing 140 stores more of them to close after January. Wick's Furniture is closing down. Levitt's is closing down all their remaining stores. Bombay is closing remaining stores. Zales Jewelers is closing down 82 stores right now and another 105 after January. Whitehall is closing all of their stores. Piercing Pagoda is closing all of their stores. Disney is closing 98 stores and more after January. Home Depot is closing 15 stores. One in New Jersey. Macy's is closing 9 stores after January. Linens and Things is closing all of their stores. The Movie Gallery is closing all of their stores. Pacific Sunwear is closing all of their stores. Pep Boys is closing 33 stores. Sprint and Nextel is closing 133 stores. JCPenney is closing a number of stores after January. Ethan Allen is closing down 12. Wilson Leather is closing down all of their stores. Sharper Image is closing down all of their stores. KB Toys is closing down 356 stores. Lowe's is to close down some of their stores. And Dillard's is to close some stores. Now, how many of those that I just named off are familiar names to both you, Don, and your listening audience?
Probably most of them.
Right. And this, as I say, is just the tip of the iceberg. Now, I'm going to give you another interesting thought to ponder here. And as I said, I came back to Arizona. It's not a secret. I let it out. Okay. Before I left here, which was 6 months ago, I left in May. May 27th is when I left Phoenix, Arizona. Now, I would pick up a Sunday paper, Don, I would say probably once a month, just to see what was going on in the real estate market, the job markets, classified ads, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And at that time, when I would pick up a Sunday paper, there would be between 15 and 25 pages of real estate ads in the Phoenix, Arizona Republic. There would be 15 to 25 pages in the classified ads for jobs in the Arizona Republic. This was only 6 months ago. Okay?
Okay.
I made a point to go down and pick up a Sunday paper yesterday.
Yep.
And I went directly to the classifieds. And do you know how many pages are in the real estate market? Six. You know how many pages are in the classified ads? Six. And in talking to the number of people that I've spoken with since I've been back here, which number probably, oh, I would say 15 to 20 people, the economy here is faltering so badly, people, they don't know what to do. I there's not a street that I can drive down. As I said, that there are not the foreclosures on every block. There is not a street that I can drive down or a car lot that I go into where I can see automobiles that are being sold at fire sale prices. And again, I have to emphasize, Don, that this is the tip of the iceberg. And so again, I pose the question of why don't the American people get it when it's affecting their pocketbook? I don't understand this. And we've only outed 8 congressmen over this? They should have swept the broom on all of these people. Don't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Who are the congressmen actually that, do you know offhand which ones?
If you can just fill some time for a half a minute, I'll pull it up for you. Okay.
Well, I suppose I can do that. And in fact, since the audio was working for those spots, I can let the listening audience know that this show is sponsored by the Idaho Observer. And if you are interested in getting the truth that you're not getting in the mainstream newspapers or on TV or mainstream radio, then you can call area code 208-255-2307. Again, that number is 208-255-2307. Ask for Don or Ingrid, and they'll be happy to sign you up for a subscription. It's a great paper, a lot of truth, all truth, actually, coming out in that paper, and they have been in business now for 12 years, and it's worth a read. And you can also read my work when I have a piece coming out in the Observer. I had some pretty big ones. Also, we are sponsored by none other than Hemp USA. And you can visit their website to see about all the wonderful hemp products that they have and actually some new products that have recently come online. And you can visit them at hempusa.org. And now, let's see if Michael's back with the
I've got it. I've got the 8 that were defeated. Interestingly enough, most of them were Republicans, but I'll read them off to you. Congressman Smith, Republican from Oregon. I believe it just says Sununu. I believe it's John Sununu, Republican from New Hampshire. He was ousted. He was defeated. Gilchrist, I guess that's Jim Gilchrist, Republican Maryland. Or it might not be Jim Gilchrist, but Porter, Republican from Nevada. Nolenberg, Republican from Michigan. Cole, K-U-H-L, Democrat from New York. And Shays, Republican from Connecticut. Mahoney, Democrat from Florida. That's it. Out of the 257 congressmen that voted for the bailout, and let me rephrase that, they voted to destroy your savings, your 401ks, IRAs, and your CDs, folks. They voted to destroy your retirement. Only 8 out of 257 got ousted. I find that amazing, Don.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, we warned this. We sound rather prophetic now, don't we? We warned the people that this was going to happen. And change. Well, you're going to get chump change if you even get that. That's about the only change that's left. And this is a foreigner, a man without a country, claiming he's an American. And I'll say that until the day I die, if nothing is done about this. And it's time.
Well, let us go there for a moment, and let's just speculate and assume for a moment that somebody up there in the court system, in the Supreme Court, is not corrupted. Maybe 4 out of the 7 aren't corrupted, and they vote and they say, well, you know, we have to overturn this because, yes, you're right, he isn't an American citizen.
Is it 7? I thought it was 9.
Maybe it's 9. Okay, I'm sorry. That's right. You're right. It's 9. Okay. So 5 out of 12.
Maybe that bit of a couple.
Okay, 5 out of 9, you know, they have an epiphany. They come to Jesus, whatever they do, and they vote him. You know, they say, okay, you're right, and they vote him out. What happens then? Who do they put in there?
Well, you know, the fact that first of all, you know, we're having this conversation on the basis of assuming that we had an honest election on top of it. I mean, it's so obvious that they can play whatever game they want to play. And because of the money laundering and the theft of trillions of dollars that occurred and the unfulfilled obligations created by George W. Bush and Dick Cheney stealing, and then Paulson and Bernanke and Greenspan, all these guys played a role in this. You know, they're holding the money back. They're giving money to Israel. They're playing ping pong with those trillions of dollars. They're sitting on $14 trillion in Citibank. Mark my words, that's going to end up going into Obama's hands very shortly. And that's the money that was to be for all of those Wantagate payouts. This is why this crisis came about, because they froze all the foreign accounts and they had to get more cash to start playing their computer games. And that's exactly what they're doing. So when they say they don't know where the money is, they're lying. They know exactly where it is, and they could track it. Right now, they're not just using the Promise software. They're using up to 88 different versions of software to launder this money. And we've given them, what, another $1 trillion to do this?
Well, I want to read to you a couple of quotes by United States Senator Jim Imhoff about this bailout, criticizing Henry Paulson. He said the Congress was not told the truth. Well, we know they lied to Congress. He said they weren't told the truth about the bailout of the nation's financial system, and they should take back what is left of the $700 billion blank check and give it that it gave to the Bush administration. He says that it is just outrageous that the American people don't know, that Congress doesn't know how much money Henry Paulson has given away to anyone. He said he could have given it to his friends. It could be to anybody else. He says, we don't know. There is no way of knowing, because the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury kept reminding them in the hearings last week, and this is Neil Cash Carey. Isn't that an interesting last name? Cash Carey. You know, just put an and in there, Cash and Carey, because they carried it all away. You know, they don't know where, what they did with it, who they gave it to, and Neil Cash Carey kept reminding Congress that we don't have to tell you. It's secret. Which puts Congress in the position of being nothing more than just, what, a token Congress? What are they there to do? Now, I watched, what's his name, Dennis Kucinich. I watched him grill Cash Carey for a good half hour. And, you know, as much as he was grilling this guy, I watched the Cheshire Shat grin on this guy's face, because he knew, with all the rhetoric and all of the, you know, the big words that they use and so forth, that he didn't have to tell them anything. And they did this all on the premise of threatening Congress with martial law if they didn't pass it, on the expense, on the backs, Don, of the American taxpayer, which is basically going to bury them.
Well, did you see Nancy Pelosi's grin when they moved that bailout through, and it jumped from $700 to $850 billion? You know, she looked like she was happier than a pig after a Saturday afternoon.
Oh, I saw it. But let me continue a little bit with this, okay? Now, last week, and this is Inhofe talking here. Last week, the Treasury Secretary, Paulson, announced that he was abandoning his plan. Now, this plan, remember this plan that they had? This is the reason that Congress voted it in. They were pressured to do it, but this is the reason, because he had this plan. He announced that he was abandoning the plan to free up the nation's credit system by buying up the toxic assets from troubled financial institutions, and instead, Paulson wants to take a more direct action on the consumer credit front. He was able to get this authority from Congress predicated on what he was going to do, and then he didn't do it. He totally shifted position and then basically turned around and said, up yours, there's nothing you can do about it because you passed the bill and the bill says it's a secret and we don't have to tell you anything. I mean, you know,
this is a wet dream for Al Capone, for crying out loud. And still, you know, the American people are clueless. They sit there, and I know this, Don, because I'm in, you know, I consult in estate planning and investments and so forth. They sit there and they watch their statements with their 401ks and their IRAs and their investments drying up. How many trillion dollars was it that has come out of the stock market? The stock market right now, I believe, is at 8,400 and something. And just last year,
it's five or six trillion, somewhere around there right now.
It's lost better than 40% of its value just here in the last month and a half. It's lost 40% of its value. People are looking at their statements, and they're watching their money dry up. And they're still scratching their heads because they don't know what's going on. Now, I'll tell you what I feel like doing. And I sit down across the table from somebody that is so clueless. They look at it and say, well, and here's the classic one-liner. And this is used by the securities people, too.
You know, the guy that your local Edward Jones representative. Well, you know, it's going to come back. It always does.
And people expect, they really still believe that their government is benevolent, is going to fix this, and their retirement money is going to come back magically. Now, I mean, how moronic is that? I feel like sitting down with these people, if I wanted to be nefarious, I could sell these people swampland in Florida with a bridge to nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
This is what these people believe. I cannot fathom, Don, how this government, that has run a coup d'état. It's a shadow government that's running this country. It is the banking system that is running our military. These guys that are in office, Bush administration, the Obama administration coming in, they're nothing more than just, you know, they're puppets. They're nothing more than just front men. This international cabal of thieves and gangsters is stealing the very life out of the American people, and the American people are turning around and thinking that they're going that the same government is going to save them. Yeah. I can't get over it. I keep pounding on this and pounding on it, and I do it on the air. Of course, I haven't been on the air. I plan on doing it on the air when I get back, but doing it face to face with people. And watching their eyes glaze over and telling me I'm a nutball and I don't know what I'm talking about and I have a tinfoil hat on my head or whatever, you know, ridiculous comments that they want to make. You just want to grab them by the tie or the shirt and slap them.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, move to another planet. I don't know. You know, I'm asking myself right now, what planet are we on here? As a matter of fact, that particular statement was made by Dennis Kucinich to Neil Kashkari on that very issue. Because Dennis looked him straight in the face, and he basically told him, he said, you expect me to believe this garbage? He says, what planet are you on? And again, here's this Cheshire cat grin. By mm-hmm. Kashkari, because he knew, you know, he had immunity to it. There was nothing they could do. How frustrating is that? You know, if I were a congressman, I'd be sitting right now and asking myself, what am I here for? What am I doing? You know, why am I taking up space and getting $185,000 a year by the American people, plus, you know, all my wonderful benefits? But there's really nothing I can do but sit and have a debate about nothing because nothing I say or do or vote on is going to count for anything.
Well, they darn well know that they're working for foreign entities. They're not working for us, and that's why they do what they do. Our problem is that most people don't recognize that. I just got an interesting email I'd like to read to the listening audience. This is from an avid listener and an avid poster, at least to my email. His name is Middle Yaya. Hardball, he saw the Chris Matthews Hardball YouTube video where Matthews was talking about Angelina Jolie, the Clintons, Brad Pitt, Carter, Bush, the UK Royals, and Obama all being related. He said, reminded me of what you and Jim Murray were talking about Friday night and the crime family. Hillary is up for Secretary of State, too. I cannot believe Americans just voted in a communist regime. Well, maybe I can. Good grief. Hardly any of these people have a more traditional American name, and they look like Arabs, Germans, and Russians, too. A daughter of mine works with a young lady whose brother is in Iraq. She said that he said Obama is going to bring the war here to America. We are going to look like Kenya. Interesting that people are bringing up these comments. Now, not to shift gears here, Michael, but we do like to talk about solutions. And of course, we can run all of this into the ground. And I know you're going to be on the show on Thanksgiving this month, if I'm not mistaken, the 27th. And so I want to address, if it's all right with you, I want to address some of the issues of what we can do to awaken people. Okay. And I know you've been out of the loop for the last week or so. Actually, the past couple of weeks, we have been doing, I've been doing some metaphysical teaching, and along with my guests, and you would be very good at this as well, because you have delved into metaphysics, and you may consider yourself maybe a neophyte of sorts. You've said that to me before, and you've said that on the air, but I think you underestimate your gifts. You're very discerning yourself. And we have talked about the components of what makes a successful solution to a problem, let's say. And there are many things. And just briefly, I want to review them so that I bring you up to speed as to what we've discussed. I've gotten tons of email about this. And this is something that I've been mentioning even when I was on your show, that we need to become more solution-oriented. We, instead of expecting these guys, we know they're criminals, we know they're committing treason, we know they're breaking every law that they've created and some that have yet to be created, and they're going to continue to do that until we start making changes ourselves. And we do that by empowering ourselves, and we have to recognize the inner power. The answers aren't going to come from outside of us. I get a lot of email where people are asking, we get the message. We know everything's screwed up. We know these people are bringing the country down, and we want to know, what can we do? How, you know, I get tons of questions asking, what can I do personally? Well, that's the key right there, is each person can recognize that we've allowed this to happen, not panic, not freak out and be consumed by the fear that they would like us to feel. Recognize that we are individuals, first of all, and in our individuality, we are indivisible, which means we are whole, or we are holy, or even sacred, despite what they tell us. That's the way God made us. Now, if we can come to that realization that we are individuals, and we are holy, and we have God-given power, then we don't need to find an answer from these people. We're not going to get it from them. That's quite obvious. We're not going to get it from the media. We're not going to get it from the politicians. They're playing their own filthy, stinking game, and it's collapsing on them right now as it stands. We're not even getting into the alien aspect of this. Let's just deal with this as if they were real people, okay? Now, we, coming to the realization that as individuals we can be empowered, and they have taught us to react from what I call the brain heart. It's this image, this ego image or idol worship that causes us to identify ourselves with the false self, with the temporary aspect of who we are. If we don't believe that the way they've created it is temporary, all we have to look at is everything else they've created, and you see how it's falling apart. Their central banks are temporary. Even though they would like them to last forever, they're falling apart. Their governments are the same way. Their jobs are the same way. Their performance is even less than that. Their integrity is nil. So why do we want to look towards these people? How can we even assume that there's one hair on Obama's body that's got anything to do about change in it, or anything to do about loving this country, or anything about being a Christian? I don't care if he's a Christian or a Muslim. Just tell the truth about what you are, and we can deal with the truth. The problem is we're not getting the truth about any of this stuff. And he's not an American. He cannot prove he was born in the United States. He can't even prove what foreign country he was born in. We shouldn't even be having this discussion. This should not even be an issue. So we have a problem. Now, as individuals recognizing our true power, we can come to a serious agreement that we cannot deny that this is happening. You see, we're in denial. We cannot pretend that this is not happening, or by feeling good, doing our metaphysical chants and our mantras and or our prayers before God without taking action, because God gave us the ability to act. He gave us the power to act, the power to think, and to discern what's going on. And we have to do that from our true heart center, not the one that they created in our ego minds or in our egotistical minds. Now, that said, if we can come to conclusions about what we can do to bring about an answer or a solution, we will find the solution. But we have to have an awareness. We have to give it attention. We have to produce action, each one of us. And we have to do this in concert. We can't be bickering over whether or not the guy's the Messiah. That's obvious he's not. It's already coming out. And what is it? It's 14 days now since the election. Not complete 14 days, but 2 weeks since the election. He's president-elect. He has not been sworn in. He's not proven, according to the Constitution, that he has a right even to be in this country. He's illegally in the country. He doesn't have a visa to be here. He's never gotten a green card. And we're talking about making this guy president? This is insanity. So let's look at the issue from that basis and stay focused on solutions together. This is what we must do, whether you're listening to a metaphysical channel or network. I don't mean a channel per se, but I'm saying a metaphysical station or a show, radio show, or you're listening to a Patriot show or a constitutional show, whatever it is. We must recognize our oneness under God. And if you don't believe in God, then this argument is not for you, or this solution is not for you. You have all the answers. But to call someone a Messiah, someone who has been in politics, for a weekend and a day, basically, and lies about everything he's voted on, lies about what he stands for, is probably involved in some direct or indirect way in four murders, three parishioners at a church, and deals drugs and smokes crack cocaine, if Larry Sinclair is telling the truth. And anybody that has stood up against him, what do? They have them arrested. They have them thrown in jail under false pretenses. I mean, what is this insanity? What is this? Why is this escaping everyone? Okay, no one's paying attention. No one's really looking for the truth. I say no one. Of course, you know, the listening audience to this show and many other shows that you and I have been on, Michael. We know those listeners are awake and see what's going on. But the one thing we're not doing is taking action. We're not getting together and making collective decisions about what we're going to do. And we have to agree that there is a solution to this problem. We don't need a million solutions. We need one. One simple solution. And we must focus our attention, and we must become aware. You and I are doing what we do as talk show hosts and journalists for that very reason, to bring that awareness to people. But to be aware and then to remain a couch potato about it, it doesn't help the situation. So what I tell people to do is to get involved, and they start by becoming conscious of who they are. We will not only be able to deal with that problem, but we will be able to correct many other problems once we take that step, just by proving that we can do this. That's not what they want to hear, but who cares what they want to hear? We've been listening, this planet's been listening to what they want to hear for thousands of years, and it ain't working. So now I turn the mic over to you. End of my rant.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you know, you're talking about the metaphysical and what do we do? And I was waiting for your, you know, your ironclad solution. But, you know, I guess my question would be, what is the first step that a listener can take? Because I know, you know, my journey has taken me, and I've shared this with you before and with your listening audience, is that my consciousness has been elevated only because I got into broadcasting. And I found that because, you know, taking that step, you have no choice but to elevate your consciousness on a number of different levels because of the arena that I find myself in. But most people don't do that. I've said this before, Don, many times on my program, is that, you know, they can't do this to us unless we let them.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Right. And so you go back to square one. Why is it that we let them? We let them... And I'm not speaking for me, but I'm speaking for the majority of the American people, that we let them because we believe them. We are hoping, we have faith that they're benevolent and that they're going to do the right thing for us. Well, once we realize that in itself, that belief is an illusion, then we come to realize that, wait a minute, this government, whoever these people are that are controlling this government, the elites, are not our friends. All they're about is money and control. That's all they care about. And they care about nothing but their own money, how much they can get, and how much control. You know, absolute power, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Barack Obama went back, and he just announced this last week, he was going to go over every executive order that George Bush imposed, and he was going to, you know, see if it was constitutional. And if it wasn't, he was going to throw it out. He said something of that nature, not verbatim, but something to that degree. Do you think that a guy is going to walk into that office with the amount of power that has been given or, you know, executive ordered into existence and turn over and undo any of that? Of course they're not. So, again, I fall back to we – let them, you know, we do it because we believe them. And so the first step to stopping this is to realize that these people are not our friends. They are not benevolent. They are not looking out for our best interest, and to stop believing them. Now, I want you to imagine a world for a moment, Don, where instead of the vast majority of people wanting to believe that our government is doing the right thing, that the vast majority of people had this epiphany and they realized that we are being looted. What do you think would happen? I pose this question to you. What do you think would happen? If 250 million Americans all of a sudden woke up one morning and, you know, they were slapped up to the side of the head and they realized that this government was literally trying to take everything they own and enslave them, what do you think would happen?
Well, I think you would have some sort of a revolution.
Exactly. And you can have such a revolution by simply doing nothing. You don't have to pick up a gun and load it and go march on Washington. All you have to do is nothing. All you have to do is stop shopping at Walmart. All you have to do is stop buying their gasoline at, you know, Exxon, at the higher gas stations, which have been, by the way, manipulating us for how many years now? Isn't it such a coincidence, Don, that it's always right around the time where vacations are coming up, that the gas prices mysteriously, because of a broken oil pipeline or because OPEC had a problem or there's a war that broke out in a particular country that has oil, the gas prices shoot up. That's all nonsense. So what do? We don't fire a shot. We stop shopping at Walmart. We stop getting on. And by the way, we stop buying gas at Exxon and Mobil. And by the way, did you? And another thing that I mentioned, or that I find very curious. Do you know now that the government is in the airline industry? Were you aware of that?
Yes.
Okay. I was looking at tickets. As most of your listeners know, my wife is in Scotland now. I was looking at tickets to go to Scotland, and specifically, I looked at a few different dates, okay, just out of curiosity. Now, at this particular time of the year, if I were to get on a jet and go to Scotland, the cost is for a ticket is somewhere around $750 because the travel, you know, it's not the high time of the year to go over there because it's very cold.
One way or round trip?
No, this is a round trip. Round trip. Okay, $750 or $734, I think, is what the airline charges. And then there is an additional $215 worth of fees. Now, curiously, if I were to fly to Scotland on December the 16th, do you know that I can get a round trip ticket for $200? But there's $700 and some odd worth of those same fees, which bring the ticket up to the same price. So, in other words, whatever time of the year is the lowest time of the year and the prices go down, the price remains the same because the government takes the difference. Were you aware of that?
Well, I hadn't bought a ticket recently, so no.
Well, okay, but here's the point. Here's the point that I want to make to you.
Well, I get the point, though. Yeah.
Yeah, as I said, stop shopping at Walmart. Stop buying gas at Exxon and Mobil. Stop getting on an airplane. Okay? It will grind this economy to a halt. It will send a message that reverberates through the walls or through the houses of the Congress and the Senate, and it will make them stand up and say, whoa, wait a minute, we better turn ourselves around and start at least giving the illusion to the American people that we're doing something right, or our whole house of cards is going to come tumbling down. Now, tell me, am I on the right track here?
Yeah, and that's a question that makes the people. You know, you remember the gas during the gas crisis? I call it a crisis. You know, as gas started going up from $50 or $60 a barrel, and it went up all the way up to $150. And you and I were on the air quite a bit telling people not to buy gas from Exxon Mobil. We said Exxon Mobil, which is the Rockefeller's replacement for Standard Oil, the largest of the oil companies, they would be forced to lower their prices to get people to start buying their gas, and it would bring all the other prices down. It would start a price war. Do you think people would pay attention to that? Of course not. They don't want to be bothered. They don't want to be troubled. But that was a very effective way to put a hurt. And it did, for a while, it did have some impact. Now, right before the election, about 2 weeks before the election, all of a sudden the cost of gasoline started tumbling, and then a barrel of oil. So it's just the game that they're playing. That's the whole thing, but you know
it's
what?
It's a game that's everything is fine right before the election. Right now, the oil prices are $55 a barrel, down from almost $150 a barrel. But it always falls into that, you know, anytime there's an election, anytime there's, you know, something significant, you know, anytime the travel is at the height of the season, something happens, the gas prices go up. Another thing I wanted to toss in here to the mix, and I may have mentioned this to you, Don, is November 12th of this year, Indianapolis opened their new airport. Now, there was nothing wrong with their old airport. I've flown out of that airport many times. But my son, who lives in Indianapolis, took a tour, a public tour of that airport 3 weeks before it opened, because it was open to the public to show them what the new airport looked like. And do you know that entire airport facility is built around security? And they have put in 12 of these security entrances where you walk in and you get a full body scan naked now. Now, the question that I have here is, who's number one, whose idea was that? What's that?
Somebody said, drivers, start your engines.
Well, whose idea was that, number one? Number two, whose money is paying for that? You know, and the city, I don't think it's the city of Indianapolis that is doing this. I believe that it is the government that's doing it, because it's all based around security. And I also believe that these extortionate fees that they're charging for these airline tickets are going into revamping these airports to just give you, you know, colonoscopies, if you will, to go through just for the control aspect. You know, they're hiring people to put them in there to watch your demeanor as you go through the airport, to see if you're sweating, if you have any stress, if you look like you might be a terrorist. Well, now you know as well as I do there are no terrorists. And this is why I say, when we're looking at solutions here, Don, the solution is not to pick up a gun. The solution is not to get angry. The solution is to do nothing. And when I say do nothing, do not participate in their corporate fascist world government. Period. End of story. Do not fly. Now, I took a trip. I drive every place I go. You know that. I don't get on an airplane unless, if I could drive across the Atlantic, I would do it. I can't do that, so I have to get on an airplane. But if I do not absolutely have to fly, I will not do it. And I won't buy gas at Exxon or Mobil, and I certainly will not shop at Walmart unless I absolutely have to. If everybody did just those three things, what kind of an impact would it make? That list that I read off not 30 minutes ago about how many stores were closing in this country, this is the tip of the iceberg, and this could have been stopped had the people woke up, stood up, and it's just like I equate it to them charging you with a crime if you don't do something, i.e. willful failure to file a tax return. You have to do this or you're going to get prosecuted for not doing it. That's what it says. Are they going to prosecute us for not shopping at Walmart? Are they going to prosecute us for not buying gas at Exxon or Mobil because the Rockefellers own it? Are they going to prosecute us for not getting it on an airplane? I don't think so. I'm sure they'd try to figure out a way to do it because that's a big part of their economy. So that, I think, is a step in the right direction. I thought of that myself, by the way, with a little help from other people.
No, that's a great idea. Now, what the listening audience can do is encourage people to listen to this interview, and they can certainly, by word of mouth, spread this message. Of course, you have people that are going to immediately put their creature comforts up front, and, oh, well, what am I going to do about my vacation? And, you know, consider driving a car, or consider another option, or maybe taking a vacation isn't the smartest thing. We don't put enough importance on the important issues, and we're into a lot of escapism and diversion and denial and pretending like these things are not happening is not going to make them not happen.
And let me add a little more fuel to this, Don. I found out an interesting
piece of trivia, no pun intended, right?
Yeah. I found out an interesting piece of trivia while I was in Texas. You know, I was living with a friend of mine for a while who has this big tank on his property that he buys diesel fuel, okay? Mm-hmm. And he puts, I don't know what it is, 5,000-gallon tank, whatever. But the farmers do that as well. Okay, they have these tanks, so when they run their tractors and they plant their fields and so forth, they have these tanks where they buy this diesel fuel. Well, you buy the diesel fuel and you're using it for farming. Do you know that they put a red dye in that diesel fuel? Did you know that?
Yeah, I've seen that before. Yeah. Okay. What is the reason they put it in there?
The reason that they put it in there is because if you're driving a diesel vehicle and you get pulled over and they test your vehicle and you are using that fuel with the red dye in it, which, by the way, is 50 cents cheaper than going to the gas station and filling your car up with it,
mm-hmm.
it's a $10,000 fine. So this is a way that they're forcing you to pay the higher prices, the 50 cents a gallon diesel fuel tax,
mm-hmm.
you know, that supposedly is used to, you know, rebuild the roads and so forth, which is another story in itself. I've driven back and forth across this country now, believe it or not, 5 times in the last year. Not all the way across, but I mean, one time I did. I drove to Plainfield, New Hampshire last year with Randy Weaver. But I noticed that there's construction going on, in a lot of it in New Mexico. And do you know that all of the construction that's going on in New Mexico on Highway 40, okay, happens to all be taking place in a designated area called safety corridors. Now, do you know what a safety corridor is?
Yes.
You drive down the road at 75 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you'll come up with – there'll be a sign that says safety corridor. Turn your lights on for safety, and then you drop your speed down 65 miles an hour, and mysteriously enough, the fines in a safety corridor double.
And they have cameras like every 100 yards
yes,
200 yards.
And there's
that.
Police all over the place. And it's, interestingly enough, you'll never find a cop outside the safety corridor. They're always in the safety corridor for safety, of course. But all of the construction that's going on throughout New Mexico and Arizona, or not Arizona, but Texas, okay, or New Mexico, it's all in the safety corridor. And what they'll do, and I noticed this in my latest drive, is that they will slow you down on a 3-lane or a 4-lane highway from 75 to 65 to 55 to 45 and sometimes down to 35 miles an hour because they know that there's no possible way that you can maintain that speed. Nobody does it. So what does that do? It allows them to pick and choose, just like shooting ducks on a pond, of whoever it is that they wish to pull over and cite and ticket, because it's for revenue. This is a part of their game. And so, you know, when we talk about what do we do, what kind of ideas do we have to stop this, we don't play their game. Simple. If we don't play their game, they lose. That's how they maintain this. That's how they maintain their revenue. We've got a caller, I guess. Did you know that? I've got a message here that says we got a caller on line two.
My Skype's not jumping. Okay.
Let's take Derek from Vancouver.
Yeah, Derek. Welcome to Evan. Okay, do you have a question or comment for Michael Herzog?
Well, I was thinking about this when you're talking about the solutions and getting into the metaphysical solutions. Because what I see is that they're obviously creating a fear-based negative paradigm, or if it's been for, you know, and it's getting stronger, and like you're saying about the laws and about the fears they're putting into people through television and through, as that fear is coming out, if we're buying into the fear, they're hoping to generate more fear, because I think they're actually ultimately the most afraid. The elite that you're talking about are actually more afraid than actually the public, because they're afraid and they're already seeing that people are aware of their individuality, they're aware of their power source, they're aware that they have that inner power, and this is what's making them even more constrictive. They're constrictive on the laws. It's all the whole paradigm constricting on itself, which is, I think, is that's why you're seeing all these structures fall apart.
Yes, well, you're very correct. If I could comment on that before Michael does, Derek. You know, you hear this saying, what you put your attention on, you create. People say, well, when we put our attention on what they're doing to us, we empower them. But when they ramp it up, they're empowering us. Works both ways.
Yeah,
let us not forget that. So you are right in that. Michael, you want to say something?
Well, yeah, but that's why they use it, you know, incrementally, like the frog in the pond. But Derek is right. I mean, this fear-mongering, you know, a terrorist hiding in under every bed and, you know, making you afraid of your neighbor because he might be a terrorist because they've found that blonde, blue-eyed people could be terrorists now. This feeds on itself, and it creates a fearful society, and they maintain and can you know, exhibit more control the more fearful they make us. And so Derek is right. We bust through that paradigm, and we come out of it, and we realize it for what it is. We realize that there is no Al-Qaeda. The only terrorists are in the White House, and you've just gone, you know, 9 light years into solving the problem. The next time they come out and they start announcing, you know, and you remember right after 9/11 when Rudy Giuliani and George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld, every two words they were saying, terrorists here and terrorists there and everywhere's a terrorist, okay, we start laughing in their face. And I'm talking about doing it in mass. And can you imagine, as Derek said, how fearful they are already, and we know these people are paranoid, okay? Can you imagine what soil would be dispersed in their pants on their way off that podium?
It is
no,
a
I can't. I don't want to either.
Derek, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, I was saying, you know, you get to the point where you watch this, the whole thing that's going on. It's actually it's amusing. It's funny.
It's amusing if you're awake, Derek.
Yeah.
But it's also in a morbid sort of way. It's amusing to watch people who are not awake that they allow it to affect them. It's amusing. It's sad. It's tragic. But if it wasn't amusing to me, I'd probably jump off the nearest bridge. You know, you see these people that walk around thinking they know what's going on because some pundit on mainstream TV has told them what to think. And these people walk around talking politics, and they think they know what's going on, and they're totally clueless. And I saw that just over at the health club the other day. I'm listening to a conversation with a couple of people who are on the ecliptizer or whatever it is, and I just have to laugh because they haven't got a clue of what they're talking about. You know, and this is where we come in, and this is where you, Derek, and the rest of the listening audience comes in as to getting people, drawing them in and listening to alternative radio so they can wake up. And this is the key.
I see a great awakening happening. You know, there are, like you said, there's a lot of people that are shut down, but I see the awakening around, I guess because what I've magnetized around me, I see it's mostly people that are starting to wake up. And I don't know if that has anything to do with just the way I think, but I see, you know, there's an awakening that's brewing underneath all this. And that's where the fear is. You know, no matter if you're not afraid of it, then it's not going to affect you.
Right, and what we have to do is get to the place where we reach critical mass, where when they do this, we just laugh at them. And we go about our business, and we continue not to shop, not to fly, not to buy ExxonMobil and so forth, and their whole house of cards falls apart. So great points, Derek. Yes.
There's a couple of points I want to make. When Michael has brought forth a few solutions, when we look at the games they've been playing with the gasoline, and this has been going on all over the world, we saw oil go up, we'll just use round figures, from $50 a barrel up to $150. Okay, that's a 300% increase. The price of gasoline, unleaded regular gasoline, went from somewhere in the neighborhood of, during that period of time, $1.35 a gallon, all the way up to $4 a gallon. Now, it's come down, dropped by 200%. Why aren't we seeing a 200% decrease or something close to where originally was? Why aren't we seeing that? You see, people are happy just to see a 50% decrease in that $4 price, and that's roughly where it is. Still, the diesel prices now are higher, and diesel used to be always a few cents to a nickel below a gallon of regular unleaded. It's because they want to make more profit and use the excuse of the fuel prices for the transportation of the cheap food that they're importing and the cheap products that they're bringing in. So they're making money hand over fist on the transportation costs of these goods that they're making money, again, hand over fist.
Yeah.
So it would behoove us to stop shopping at these places.
Well, you know, and as I said, the last trip that I've taken, the amount of trucks, and I'm doing the job, doing the math here. They got a 100-gallon tank on each side of their rig, and paying the amount of money that they're paying to fill up their gas tanks at $4 a gallon. You're talking about almost $1,000 to fill up their gas tank, for crying out loud. And again, going back to square one, stop shopping at Costco. Stop shopping at Walmart. It'll shut down all the slave trade over there in China, in the Philippines, and in Vietnam, and so forth. And it will bring production back to the United States. And there are people out there that are, you know, professing buy American. There's websites you can go on and buy it. It might cost you a little bit more money, but it'll keep the manufacturing here in the United States, and it will destroy their plan. And again, it can be done without firing a shot. You know, we just have to do it. We just have to, first of all, realize it. We have to accept it, and we have to do it. And that takes a little bit of discipline.
Yeah. Derek, any more comments or questions?
No, I just think, well, when you're talking about the something I remember hearing about in the trucking industry, that was still going on. It was through the center, it was going through Texas or from the Gulf up to St. Louis. It was going through the center of the United States, and they had the freeway. I think it was being built right through Texas.
The Trans-Texas Corridor.
Yeah, is that still being built?
Yes, it is. But they continue to say it doesn't exist. And that freeway that doesn't exist, I've seen it up close and personal because I've been there. It's right adjacent to I-35 in Texas. And it's also going up through their cordoning off roads, I-69 coming out of Fort Wayne, Indiana, going through Indianapolis. They're doing the same thing, making toll roads out of it, but they claim it doesn't exist. And unless you're there and see it, you believe them, if you believe that you have a benevolent government. So, again, it's just a matter of awakening and realizing that these people are not telling us the truth. Now, they've got part of that corridor built down in Texas, and what they do is they design it to where you can travel without getting on the toll road because they had a road going next to it. But what they have is stoplights there, and it's very, very slow. Whereas if you're impatient, you jump on the freeway, and it costs you about the equivalent of, I would say, $3 a gallon worth of gasoline in tolls. It'd be about the same as paying $3 a gallon for gasoline to get from point A to point B quicker. And they do this by design to try to get you to go to take that toll road on the freeway rather than take the side road. It would be like an access road, if you know what I mean. Okay.
Yeah.
And I refuse to take that toll road, and I would fight traffic. Regardless of what point during the day, it would take three times as long to get from point A to point B unless you got on that toll road. And this is how they try to make you do it.
And they have the plan to turn Kansas City into a Mexican port, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
So that they can drive from Mexico all the way up to Kansas City and not go through customs.
Well, and it's not just the Trans-Texas Corridor. We're talking about the Canamex Corridor, too, that goes through Arizona. And they're building that right here. Our sold out governor Napolitano here is, of course, you know, voted that in. And I had the Senator Karen Johnson on my program, who's a senator from Arizona. And she's a definite patriot. I mean, she came up, she had the guts to come up in front of the Senate in Arizona and say, yes, 9/11 was an inside job and we need a new investigation. Okay. Well, that ruffled a few feathers. She said that right in the Senate. And they videoed it. But that being said, we do have good people in the state Senate in Arizona that are trying, but we don't have enough. And we've got these people that are sold out or compromised, like the dyke Napolitano here in Texas that is, you know, got her nose or, you know, her brown nose up the hiney of some of these people for political aspirations that are signing off on some of this stuff that is destroying our country. And this is what we have to correct. And we can do that by implementing some of the ideas that I just mentioned. And by the way, they're not my ideas. There's nothing new. It's just getting the people to do it, waking the people up to realize that they are participating in their own destruction by doing what they're doing. And they must realize that, or it's over. Yeah. All right, I'm done. I'm through with my rant.
Well, Derek, I want to thank you for calling into the show. Please call in again.
Well, I appreciate what you guys are doing, and thanks for letting me be on.
Well, it's our pleasure. Call in again.
Yeah, well, thanks. Bye.
Okay, Michael, we've come to that time where I have to start wrapping up and get us out of here. But
let me say I'll see you again on the 27th. But, you know, of course, I'm going to invite you up on my program. I'm doing my inaugural show on the 29th, and you're welcome on my program anytime, Don.
Okay. Well, you let me know. Just give me a call. Now, you're opening up on Stanley Ann Dunham's birthday. You know that.
Is that right?
That's how much down the rabbit hole I've been.
Well, maybe he should send me a card, or is it vice versa? I don't know.
it's 2 days after mine, actually. So.
Okay. Well, no, I'm doing a show. I'm doing a show on Saturdays and Sundays, 6 to 8 p.m. Central Time.
Saturdays and Sundays, okay.
Yes. All right. All right, well, it's been a pleasure.
And that's on the Oracle Broadcasting Network?
That's correct.
What is their web address? We'll give that out.
OracleBroadcasting.com, or they can listen to it on right from my website at theamericanawakening.org. It'll be streamed right from my website.
All right, very good. Do you have a parting word for our audience?
Yes, my website has been redesigned, and you'll love it. And there's actually a test, or there's actually a comment that you can make that you love it better than the old one, or you hate it, one or the other. and I look forward to it. It should be up very shortly. And until then, quit shopping at Walmart unless you have to. Don't fly unless you absolutely have to. And quit buying gas at Exxon and Mobil. That's what I have to say for you tonight. And I'll see you on the 27th, Don. Okay?
All right, Michael. You take care.
All right, see you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, Michael Herzog, will be back on Thanksgiving, November the 27th, so be sure to tune in for that show. Tomorrow evening, our special guest is the Reverend Roxy Hampton, all the way from Hawaii, the wannabe birthplace of Barack Obama, but it ain't. So with that, I want to thank Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight, and again, Michael Herzog, our special guest. Most of all, thanks to Derek, who called in, Middle Yaya, for your email message, and the listening audience for tuning in. Everyone have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.